Welcome back, everybody, to another fantastic, super jam-packed edition of the Be Better Podcast. I am now with, I would say, do I dare to say, our regular co-host, because our first original co-host was actually Mike Ladendorf, who never appeared on a single episode, and he's the person that actually inspired this whole thing. But Gabby has been a little bit GOA, so Devin, the couch has your imprint of your butt. Way too often.
Now, you were an officer of the law, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Possession is what percent of the law?
It is...
9/10?
No, well, it depends. I mean, if you're watching TV law, like Law and Order, yeah, then that might be true. But it's not that's not how it works in real life.
Well, here I am.
That's
legally...
Legally
possessing the co-host position.
You have sweated in those headphones, and you're in the... Yeah, that is so true. So, well, welcome back, Devin. Good to see you.
You as well.
You've been well?
I've been well.
We are facing here in Minnesota a quote-unquote snow apocalypse.
A classic Minnesota snowpocalypse.
Yeah,
yep.
And I went to get gas for the snowblower today, and there was like four other people at the gas station doing the exact same thing. I got to thinking... As a 51-year-old Minnesotan, I refuse to believe the hype of any snowstorm to that the same level as I refuse to believe the hype of any professional sports team in our town. So just like I did not celebrate the Vikings having an amazing season and, oh, we're going to the Super Bowl, you know, I'll believe it when I see it type of thing. Hearing Sven Sundgaard, NPR, and all the folks out there, even my friends, Ian Leonard, you know, Jen McDermott, like they're high-level professionals. Until I see the final tally, I will not believe the hype on it.
Show me the snow is what you're saying.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I hear all my sports guys going, you know what? The Wild are going to make a run. We've had the team that we've always wanted. Here we go, baby. Somebody dust off a shelf for the cup.
Who hurt you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm telling you, I've been hurt so many times. So I say, as a true, a diehard adult Minnesotan, until I see it,
I
won't believe it.
That is a fair perspective.
But this is the time when I would have wanted to buy into your Devin's going to come shovel your house program, which you have talked about before.
MSP Move Snow Removal Program presented by Devin Palmer Remax Results.
Yes, I know. That is pretty powered by Final Case Sporting Services.
Powered by Final Case Sporting.
So that would that be in play for this?
Oh, absolutely. So it's a special client reward program. So anyone who has bought or sold more than six homes with me
for life. Like, that's like Subway sandwiches. I could get a free sub.
Yeah, and all you have to do is buy or sell six times.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
So does that... I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing.
I think it's worth it for me.
How many homes have you bought and sold? First of all...
Only one.
Only one, okay. So you'd basically cash in when you're 90.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm leaving the state finally, then it would actually apply.
Yep.
I feel like this is a bait and switch situation.
No, I think it is. It'd be a shame if you like moved to Florida at home number five and never got there.
What if I have multiple homes? Will you come to all of them? Like, will you go to Grand Rapids?
Will
you go up to Grand Rapids and clean the whole Sipe Road?
Ooh. Then we would have to be talking at least a few million-dollar properties in the mix.
Okay, a few. Okay. Oh, so it's not defined yet.
Because if you buy and sell $6 million properties, there's no backwards far enough that I won't bend over for you.
See, I feel like it's me finding the $9 DeWalt drill on the Home Depot website and then buying 20 of them. They got to honor that, right?
They do.
So if I buy these houses and like maybe they're like, you know, maybe they're mobile homes or there's something I'm going to flip, I'm going to hold you to it. And you're going to have to do them all. And you're going to have to say, you know what? I need to better define my terms.
Well, you know what, Chris? If you and I did six real estate transactions, the time we would spend together in the process would be reward enough for me.
Oh, you are so full of it. So,
we do have a snowpocalypse. Here's how it's negatively impacting my life.
Okay, talk to me.
And how my life is so very difficult. I have a closing, 9 a.m. on Thursday, which is midway into the snow window. So I'm navigating it with the title company, with my client, with the lender, with the seller. We're trying to put the pieces together to make sure we can get something done, whether it's Thursday or if we have to postpone it. But there's a lot of moving pieces. So I'm navigating that.
So you're navigating that.
Yep.
Me, on the other hand, I have hockey playoffs for both Cole and Julian. So Ooh. Districts, that's a lot of moving parts there, a lot of hockey.
If they go to snow days and cancel school, will mm-hmm. those events go ahead or will they get bumped?
They don't get bumped. It's okay. like, it's going to happen either way.
Okay.
It's going to happen either way. The only time that I saw a game recently get delayed was Armstrong Cooper. They broke one of the plexiglass sheets
mm-hmm.
Around the rink during warmups, and so they couldn't replace it fast enough, so they had to delay the game.
Okay.
And they put that game off a couple days. But I'm worried about Friday, Devin. That's my big day. That's my like big calendar moment.
Is it the launch of anything special in
life? You know, I have...
Can we tease your little plug here?
Let's just do it all in. So you know that I have been an amateur beer brewer for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been a hockey fan forever and a day.
Mm-hmm.
Behind your head is a vintage North Stars pennant signed by the likes of Don Beaupre, Dino Ciccarelli, Kurt Giles, all those guys. You know, those are actual. That was like me.
I understand none of those references, but yes.
Well, just so you know. Yep. Okay, so you can Google things later. So I named a beer that I created after an old North Star.
Mm-hmm.
Name was Basil McRae. It's a wheat. It's an American wheat beer with lemon and basil. And so, his name being Basil, it being Basil, they're spelt identical. I thought, you know what? Let's put that name out there. So I pitched it to Fulton back at the Lutzen 99er about mm-hmm. a year ago. And Ryan Petz, my new best friend, the CEO and co-founder of Fulton, said, hey, I like it. Let's go forward. You want to do this? And I'm like, yeah. So we basically modified my recipe to match what they can do for production.
Mm-hmm.
They start with a 125-gallon batch to test drive it. If it hits and they decide we're going to make this, it goes to mass production. And then you can start buying it in the liquor store. Unfortunately, now it will just be available in the tap room at 4146 Avenue North, right next to the Twin Stadium.
That's Fulton Tap Room.
Fulton Tap Room for all of your beverage needs. And then it would go to full production. So the big rollout party, the release party, is this Friday. And it's going to be at the Fulton Tap Room. And Basil McRae himself will actually be there. He was
the Basil McRae.
So, do you remember watching the movie The Mighty Ducks?
Yep.
Okay. Remember when the two hockey guys came off? They were wearing the North Stars jerseys, and they were kind of harassing. Gordon Bombay.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, if you remember, so Basil McRae was and Mike Modano come off, based two very famous Minnesota North Stars. They come off and they have a little interaction. Like, hey man, this guy was big in Pee-wees, and it's like Modano goes, I heard you were a farmer. That was his only line. He goes, no, I'm actually a lawyer and blah, blah, blah. And so, he's a movie star, been in the NHL for a number of years. Now he currently is a GM for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Okay.
He's coming into town. He arrives Friday. Going to be at Fulton from 5 to 7, fulfilling this man's middle-aged make-a-wish, which is, to make his own beer, have it produced. I got the can already. The label art is already done. The crowlers have been filled. And we did a taste testing yesterday up at the production facility up behind Betty Danger's, and it is amazing.
Yeah, came
it's,
out.
It's really good. It's actually, dare I say, it's better than what I created.
I was just going to ask where we rank them.
It's actually probably a notch above what I do, mainly because the carbonation is just dialed. They, because they're. I mean, this is an industry level brewery, right?
Would you say that they're at the pro level and you are
I'm an amateur. I don't even know that I rank as amateur. I'm a neophyte. And I'm not even sure if I've reached neophyte status. I dabble. But these guys are dialed. I mean, mm-hmm. dialed. Dialed to the extent where they actually produce beer for other breweries by contract.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that?
So, nice.
Yeah, I learned that yesterday when I was walking around. We basically went back in the cooler and I got to see some stuff. They actually make beer for the band Rush.
Really?
Yeah. So it's like, it's branded. They make Rush Golden Ale.
Huh.
And it's got like the label, like Rush is the band. And they started doing it in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a production facility here in the States. And so they looked to Fulton.
Well, if you have the team and you have the facility,
why not? Why not?
Absolutely.
Yep, they got it all. And they do top-notch work there. It's not like, bottom basement stuff. And then some other things like Falling Knife.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of them?
Nope. Another
small brewery from around here. They don't have the capability to brew their own stuff. So they hire another brewery to make the stuff for them. Subcontract it out.
They have the recipes and the ideas.
I mean, it's you talk about a business model. These guys are dialed. So Basil's coming. Beer's getting released. Soda Stick made a t-shirt for it. They're the ones that make all the t-shirts for the Minnesota Wild.
Okay.
And then my favorite podcast outside of this one, which is Bar Down Beauties. I contacted a lady that I have met before, Jessie Pierce, who writes for NHL.com and does some work for Channel 9. She is having Basil on their podcast, and they're going to be mentioning and talking not only about Basil, but also about the beer release.
So this is a very elaborate trick for you to get to meet a podcaster you like.
I've met him before. And
to get to meet Basil.
Well, yeah. Let's just
put Basil, will you be my friend now? I made a beer for you.
Let's put it all under the umbrella of what Jill called a middle-aged man's make-a-wish.
It really is.
It is. It is. Yep. So if nothing ever happens to this, I have lived my best week.
Yep.
Well,
now, what are we thinking? Snowpocalypse Wednesday, Thursday.
Oh, it's going to be fine.
Oh, it's going to be fine.
What's the city of Minneapolis, dude? We don't mess around when it comes to snowplows.
You got plows.
We just named some new plows.
That's right.
You got Blizzo out there.
Mm-hmm.
Blizzo, the new one. Oop. What is it? Coming on your outside. what were the other ones?
I don't even remember.
There were so many good snowplows that we named. But yeah, Blizzo is assigned to the downtown district, so Blizzo's going to be clearing out the road.
So irregardless of weather.
It's going to happen. He's Canadian, dude. We're all good.
He's not fazed.
I will go get him on a snowmobile if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just me and him drinking beer and like wearing t-shirts, that's all it needs to be.
So I'm trying to think in sports analogies. You're like that movie where Mark Wahlberg walked on to the Eagles. That's you right now.
Is that a football movie?
That's a football movie.
I don't know if I've seen that one. What was it called?
The Eagles were so bad they hosted a tryout for.
And Mark Wahlberg was the quarterback?
He was. I don't know what job he.
Oh, got. He walked onto the football team.
Yeah, but he did a little tryout. But that's you. You're Mark Wahlberg right now.
So I'm the Mark Wahlberg of this scenario?
You're the Mark Wahlberg like of this that. Story.
I like that.
Into the world
Tell
of beer.
Tell your mother I said hi.
Into the world of beer.
I love that. I'll take that.
This is
that
your
compliment.
Little shot at the title.
It is. This is my moment of fame. Mm-hmm. This is my 15 minutes that I've never, ever mm-hmm. lived.
Do they have any idea? Do they have an Evite for the event or anything?
It's open. So if you go if you go to Fulton Beer on the Instas, on the socials,
oh boy.
They got the old style banner that you used to print these up and then would post them around.
So we really need people to show up because we don't have any idea of numbers.
Well, you know, I got a lot of people that I know. I have friends, Devin, outside of this, and they drink beer and they play hockey. So those things are all good. So that's my big thing. So you got a closing on Thursday. I got a beer release on Friday.
Yep.
I think those are two pretty good things for the week. And we got a snow apocalypse coming, which we'll see. We'll believe when it happens.
Yep.
We'll believe when that happens.
No, it's completely. Everyone likes to get hyped up about it, but sometimes they're pretty underwhelming.
Well, it's because everybody's looking for ratings.
Yep.
Everybody wants to. Oh, look at the radar. Oh, mm-hmm. look what we got here. Oh, look at this projection. And why is it that it's only going to hit the Twin Cities? It's like no. It's going to hit like. St. Cloud, Alexandria. That's what it's going to do.
You think?
It's going to go north. Okay. I know it.
Okay.
It's not like Al Roker's flying out. I didn't see the Weather Channel people coming in yet. You know, it's not like they're leaning into a hurricane or anything.
That's true. They would. If Roker's not here, it's not going to be that dramatic.
No. Do you think they'll name this? Because they started naming snowstorms.
If we get close to a foot, they'll name it.
You think so?
I think so.
I wonder if there's a threshold for that.
You got to wonder.
I think naming snowstorms is a big reach. Again, it's the Weather Channel trying to be popular.
Chris, it's winter. We got to have something to do.
It's the end of winter, Devin. We need to be done with this. Although the state tournaments are starting, and that traditionally indicates that we're going to get one. And March is in like a lion, out like a lamb.
Yep.
So we're coming into March.
We're coming into March.
So I guess it is kind of fulfilling some of the things that I did practice when I was in second grade.
Don't we have is the Berkey this weekend?
Berkey is this weekend. Yeah, the American Berkey Binder is big. I got a friend of mine or one of my clients is going to be skiing that.
Nice.
Coming from Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Oh, coming in that what? Long?
Yeah, coming in hot. Omar was, he skied for the U.S. Paralympic team and he was in Sochi. So mm-hmm. he skied and he was a Nordic and biathlon athlete in Sochi. And he picked up the skis again.
When you can do two different Olympic events, yeah.
That's pretty good.
You're pretty good.
He's legit. So he's going to be coming in skiing that. And my friend Andy Oman, who I play hockey with, his son John, he and Omar both were on the same Paralympic team in Sochi. So they'll be both skiing, which will be kind of fun. But with this big snowstorm, who knows? Sometimes too much snow can be a problem.
At a certain depth, you'd have to think so.
Yeah.
I mean, even just for the logistics and everyone driving in, it could be a mess.
They're going to groom it, but I know that they had been dealing with a lot of melting, rain, and ice this week. So who knows what's going to happen for that.
Yeah. Super weird foundation of ice, then a foot of snow on top.
It's not going to be good. Yeah. Weird. So it's going to be it's going to be a little bit of a quagmire to see what's going to happen there. So, yeah, the Berkey's coming up this weekend. That should be fun to see. Do you have anybody or know anybody who's skiing it?
I know a bunch of buddies who are doing it.
Any call-outs or name drops you want to give?
No. I don't endorse or condone skiing.
No?
Only it's a great...
You're not going to see MSP moves on a ski kit?
Chris, the way I feel about Wisconsin and Iowa, you have to pick your natural enemies, okay? Wisconsin and Iowa are our natural enemies.
Are you going to pick them on both sides, though?
Of course.
So we can take both of them. Is South Dakota your neutral ally?
Not worth the time.
Really?
Not worth commenting on.
Okay? I could say North Dakota, maybe, but South Dakota?
Not worth commenting on.
Really?
I got no... They're less than nothing to me. Okay? But you have to pick your right enemies.
So they're like your butters to like...
The Hawkeyes, Wisconsin, the Badgers. It's just fun as a Minnesotan to poo-poo other states just because they're right there. Yes. Are they almost the same as us? Yes, of course. Now, skiing... is like Wisconsin. It's adjacent, and it's mostly the same as all these activities that I like to do, but I like to pick on it.
Oh, Devin.
Also...
You've never skied before, have you?
No, I have.
Okay.
All of my serious ski friends who, like, grew up in the sport and were doing the junior Olympic level, when they were young, they all act like they have an exercise physiology degree all the time. Like, oh, well, I'm a skier, and we talk so much about X-Phys, I basically have an X-Phys. They have a level of confidence that's really annoying. So I am very prejudiced against skiing.
Yes, I could see that. And I could hear, I could definitely hear that in your voice. I mean, it does seem like skiers, they are pretentious a bit. A little bit sometimes. And they want to be European.
Your word's not mine.
They want to be European. They act a little bit too European.
Guys, you're Midwestern. This is not Europe.
No. You're from Wisconsin. You're not from Finland.
Skiing, what I don't like about skiing is it reminds me of mountain biking. Because here in the cities, if you're going to go ski.
Wow, you're going to go mountain biking too?
No, I don't. Because you have to, throw that exercise equipment in your car and go drive somewhere. Then do your activity, pack it up again, and drive home.
Well, you can mountain bike from your house to like.
People don't. If you're going to go to Leb. You drive there. People drive there. So it just, to me, the extra time commitment, I'm not.
Oh.
Generally, it's like running. It's so easy. You put on shoes, you're out the door, you're done in 20
to 60
minutes.
So are you throwing swimming in this barn, too?
Swimming, I have not really swum at a pool since 2015.
This is true, but are you going to demonize swimming the same way you have demonized skiing and mountain biking?
But from a logistic standpoint, you would have to lump it in the same category. So from one angle.
So you make exceptions.
Yeah, for stuff that I do.
Oh, I so have you in a box right now.
So from one angle, you have to say, like, okay, there's an extra time commitment to it. And two, just like all of our other sports, there's a finesse with the equipment and prepping and waxing the skis that I don't have an appetite to learn.
Okay. Softball? Football? Mm-hmm. Are those also going to be in that same realm?
Those have no interest. They're not aerobic endurance activities.
So you just like exercise?
Yeah.
Okay. So anything that's...
I was a literal professional at exercising.
You were the guy Kenny Powers is talking about when he said, nope, not trying to be good at exercise. I play real sports.
I was that guy. So that's our diatribe about skiing. And let's wish everyone at the Berkey a nice day doing your hobby.
Good luck, everybody. Good luck.
The Berkey is so funny because it's like a marathon where it has a huge... You know, they got thousands of people doing it, but they can only, it's such a finite track. So it's a real interesting thing where you have to be in that first wave or you're skiing through much, the snow is all messed up by the second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh waves. And if you're fit, you're moving through a boatload of people the whole time.
Yep.
So it's not as convenient as like a marathon. If you get started later in a marathon, you sort your way through pretty quick. But skiing, it's just an interesting thing when it's that big of a mass start. Because I have a friend who is a fit guy, but got assigned to the seventh and final wave.
Oh.
So I think he's in for just a long day of kind of scooching around people and getting the worst of the snow.
And you've got such a wide radius when you're skiing too, because you not only have, like, when you think about running, it's like you could kind of wiggle through the side, mm-hmm. right? Skiing, you got, like, if you're skate, you have another, like, couple feet on either side of you. You got your poles. I mean, it's dangerous.
Yep.
You take up a lot of radius. I mean, even mountain biking, you could say, like in a Schwami or a Lutzen where it's a mass start, you could say, you know, I could wiggle through some things. But skiing's a whole different thing. Whole different thing. Well, that's, you know, that's something to look forward to that we'll never do.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Anything happened this last week? Did you have any last couple weeks? Any big things you've been doing?
Just been riding Zwift, enjoying that.
Very nice. Yep. Do you have a trainer of choice when you're riding Zwift?
I'm on a Saris H3 right now.
Okay. Well, how did you choose that?
Because Saris went bankrupt this past year, and they had them on secret super sale. So I got a $1,200 trainer for $400 shipped.
Dirt cheap.
So, yeah, I got the bankruptcy price.
So when that breaks down, you're kind of SOL?
Yep.
It's kind of like the CompuTrainer scenario.
Yep.
Well, that's good.
Well, I think they'll restructure and sell the company to someone, right? I think they've probably done that.
Can you just keep telling yourself that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep telling yourself.
Not CompuTrainer. I think. CompuTrainer's still going?
No. I actually gave away a dozen CompuTrainers to a friend of mine.
Straight up.
Yeah. So I put a thing out on USAT on the coach's website. I'm like, hey, I got a dozen trainers. You pay for the shipping. I'll send them to you. And I had two guys that kind of said, yeah, I'll do it. And I gave one guy like two. And then the rest all went to another guy out on the East Coast. And where the rest of them went, I also gave them the two old towers that I had. Like, the ones that, like, you had to plug into the internet. They didn't even have Wi-Fi. And I think those were, like, those are way back. Those are, like, the first computers we had when we were at SES. And I gave them...
Because CompuTrainer, they were the pioneer in this game.
They were great. But the software updates you needed to have, I mean, it was, like, it got to a point where it's, like, I was collecting them like baseball cards. And so finally I said, hey, who will take these? And so and I got people to raise their hands, and because I wasn't going to use them anymore. Also, the thing that I didn't like about CompuTrainer is that changed with the new trainers are, number one, Bluetooth.
Yep.
So it's completely wireless. And also direct drive.
Yeah.
Direct drive changed the game, dude. You don't have to have the variance of tire pressure or tire contact or rolling resistance. None of that was a calculator. So direct drive was a big piece. Also, you didn't have all that Cheeto dust all over your wall. Didn't have to buy a training tire, all that stuff. It just kind of clicked on, clicked off.
Direct drive is it's a vastly superior experience.
Oh, absolutely.
At the Fix Studio, when I was training there the winter before COVID, they do either rollers or CompuTrainers. They kept the CompuTrainers. So I was like, guys, why are you doing CompuTrainers still? Because direct drive, if someone has a slightly older bike and they have like a 9-gear bike, they can't fit on the modern direct drive trainers.
Well, the only way they could is if you swapped out cassettes. So in order to...
Well, the little spindle thing, the driver is... set for 10 or 11 speed.
It is, but they're conversion kits.
Yeah.
So just like, and the other thing would be, is if you're moving from, let's say, a traditional skewer to a through axle, those are all things that you would have to, you would have to do some conversion of those.
Yeah. But point being, they were like, okay, we have an array of different bikes we have to tailor to.
Absolutely.
We just can't, the CompuTrainer was still the best solution.
It's definitely there. Yeah. I mean, it's just that they went kaputs.
Yeah.
And when they did have the wireless sensor, that puck,
mm-hmm.
that was a big game changer. But you had to change your whole system to get the puck. That was like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
That was kind of a doozy. And when we ran like big CompuTrainer classes, it was great.
Yeah.
You know, you could put them all up. We ran races. We did like indoor races, like before the stadium series became a thing.
10 years ago.
Dude, I was so in front of our time. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at that picture right up to your 3 o'clock there. That's for me, Ironman Canada. I've got to say that's probably 2006, 2008 maybe. But notice what I'm wearing on the bike.
Yeah, you were in the full
TT suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Full TT suit, baby. Knew the advantages of that way back when. We had to make our own before those became a thing. Now you go to Ironman. What's everybody wearing?
All in that TT,
suit, baby. So yeah, we were kind of ahead of the game in those ways.
Are you wearing Newtons?
I am wearing Newtons. I got those for free. I got those for free from
rest
somebody.
Rest in peace, Newton. Is Newton still going?
I think they are. I think
really?
I think they are actually, because I've been trying to score a pair from USAT, but nobody will give me a pair.
Because
I'm just kind of a swag whore sometimes.
You just really are.
Oh, speaking of shoes, check out the shoes I'm wearing here.
Wow.
And I'm not going to pimp
the
brand.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, they're called Watermelon. That's the color. But see the thing on the heel?
Mm-hmm.
Because Jill, my wife, laughs at me so much for being, like, having, like, zero lower back mobility now. Or, like, hip mobility. I'm so, like, you know, just, like, it hurts. She got me shoes that I can put on without having to unlace them.
Uh-huh.
That's like a reinforced heel, so you're not like crunching the heel
down.
You
can slip that foot in. Yep.
I can just like do it without even touching them. There you go. What do you think?
That's a realtor's dream right there. Right. I always wear slip-ons.
Right there. It's like you mm-hmm. go, yeah, just like boom, in and out. Do you carry a second pair of shoes when you work?
I have.
Or do you do the slip covers like doctors wear?
No. I wear slip-on shoes, so I have loafers.
Oh, not Crocs?
Not Crocs.
Is that not industry cool?
It's a certain kind of a look if you show up to an appointment to show someone a house in Crocs, or I show up to sell your house and I'm in Crocs. It's just a different, there's a market for that.
Is it better than your FU flip-flops?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So those days are gone. So yeah, slip-ons, because I want to be in a sock in your house.
What about clogs? Would you ever think about wearing clogs?
Well, no.
No?
No.
That's kind of a thing now again.
I'm not a clog guy. My wife loves clogs, but I'm not a clog guy.
Well, she's a nurse, so that's big in the nurse field, because mm-hmm. they're like...
They love the clogs.
Yeah, they love the clogs. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking that you might look good in a clog. You know, it might be
boost
a look...
my height, look taller when I'm walking.
I mean, it's like,
hey,
you could be a member of KISS with those things on. It would be totally good. So this last week, I spent at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs. The Olympic Paralympic Training Center. So it's the OPTC now. Because they have completely gone co-branding, which is great, because I think it's utilized equally now by Olympic and Paralympic athletes.
And you were doing a camp out there?
Yeah, so USA Triathlon have gone a number of different routes trying to identify new talent.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of from COVID, we had to do things outside of races and have ways that people can give you information without you going and physically grabbing it from them. So we created a virtual combine. We, meaning the Royal We, I didn't do it personally. Other people have. Tommy Safaris was there. Alex Hewitt. Tommy was like, he was part of kind of gathering all of this. He's Katie's husband.
Oh, yeah.
Former pro triathlete.
He's funny.
He's very funny.
Yeah.
Super kind fella. Hates being identified as in the same category as Pat.
Oh, he doesn't like that status?
No. He and Pat are not in the same category. I'm not going to go into that, but
okay.
He does not like to be lumped into the my wife's Olympian. I'm the husband of an Olympic person.
Well, because he was kind of on the cusp himself in his own career.
He was. He was a pro for a while.
Yep.
But yeah, he is not.
Man, he's a good swimmer.
He is a good swimmer. Mm-hmm. He's a fun fella, too. A lot of travel in him. So they put that together. We brought two VI athletes,
mm-hmm.
which is visually impaired.
Yep.
Two guides for them. Three wheelchair athletes,
mm-hmm.
and two ambulatory athletes. Both were leg amputees. One above the knee, one below the knee. And we had a full camp. So basically, bringing some people in that some of them had experience in triathlon, some had no experience. So teaching them everything we could about paratriathlon pathway, how do you get to be starting the race, to how do you get to be on the Olympic podium.
So some of the people in this pool had, what was the potential, like what were the metrics they had turned in that showed you they had the potential that they were worth investing this effort in?
They had to turn in swim and run times.
Okay.
Cool part about this was our two VIs, one VI actually is on the pathway to competing in Paris and competed in Tokyo in the 100, 200, and 400 track
oh, wow.
and field. Yeah, so her name is Taylor. The other VIs, her name was Colleen. She's been on the USA Swimming Paralympic team for 12 years on the national team.
That's the classic recruiting pattern.
It is.
Because it's always post-collegiate swimmer, post-collegiate runner.
Yep. And so they're coming in. interesting thing that I got from all of them, mm-hmm. and especially from Colleen and Taylor, was the culture at swimming and the culture at track and field, very, very toxic.
Really?
Very toxic. Yeah.
You're hearing it here first.
I know. And so it was, which is refreshing to know that a program that we are creating and that I put a lot of pride in is seen as something that's very supportive and family-like and that people want to come be a part of.
Yeah.
So to all those people who are in single sports, in paratriathlon, or in parasports, come to paratriathlon because we...
When you're getting sick of the drama, come over to triathlon.
Exactly. No drama for your mama over here. So it was really good, and it was fun. It was a challenge to try and do things like we did a five-minute power test
mm-hmm.
in the human performance lab up at on the second floor of the gymnasium there where they have the altitude chamber,
okay,
where they can control the altitude and temperature inside this ginormous room where they can do testing and training. So when we were going to Tokyo, they could dial down the atmosphere to sea level,
yep.
and then the temperature up to what it was predicted for race day.
Ah.
Yeah, super. I mean, this is like science. Obviously, it's the Olympic Paralympic Training Center. That should have that level stuff. But we brought everybody into that area to do these five-minute power tests on the bike so we can get some baseline information. So we use Watt bikes for ambulatory and VI people. And then we had Wahoo trainers, the Wahoo kickers, for our chairs. Cool thing I learned about this was, I'm like, okay, we just like a compy trainer, turn it around, it'll work just fine.
Yep.
Okay, think about that for a second. Turn it around, it'll work just fine. Why did I fail on that one?
Wrong drive sides, wrong side.
Wrong.
Okay, you tell me then.
It's because it is a freewheel hub on the Wahoo.
Oh.
And so you'd be spinning against the freewheel.
Yeah.
So this guy named Josh Sweeney, who is a paracyclist, super wizard fabricator, came up with this contraption that inverts the Wahoo kicker and hangs it upside down.
So it's like mounted.
Yes, it's like a big arm bracket, and it hangs it upside down. Now you add that thing on there, and it's like 100 pounds now. So lunking these things from the tri room up to the human performance lab was like a CrossFit workout in and of itself. But when this thing hangs upside down,
mm-hmm.
it's brilliant, huge game changer. Because
you just flip it, but in a different. He's thinking 4D chess.
Oh,
were thinking checkers, and he's thinking chess.
I'm Chinese checkers. I'm like, I ain't even like even qualifying for real checkers, right? I was playing sorry over yep. here. But yeah, exactly. So it was something that just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are a hand cyclist, look up Josh Sweeney, just like it's spelled, on Facebook, and you'll see this, and just, or you just put Josh Sweeney trainer, you can see these things, and it's amazing what he's done. And it's like, it just changes the game, and you got to go there because the Wahoo is a really nice unit.
Yep.
They're expensive as all get out. I did bring one home back with me.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was from USAT. An athlete had got one through a sponsorship thing. She said it didn't work, and then somebody threw away half the parts, so like the core of it had been sitting there.
Yep.
So I need to get, so I got a service code into Wahoo right now. If anybody from Wahoo's listening, please answer that.
Now hold on. You just cleared your garage of 12 defunct CompuTrainers, and now you've absorbed a now defunct, semi-defunct Wahoo.
It's not semi-defunct. Here's what I'm missing. I'm missing the power cable.
Are we putting out the official request list to your listeners?
Exactly. I'm missing the power cord, which I can buy online. But the thing I can't buy is the conversion from skewer to through axle, which on the drivetrain side or on the cassette side is actually a screw-in piece because it goes to a larger
hole. You can't buy it? Why can't you buy it?
You can't buy them online. They only sell because it's stuff that comes with it already.
Oh, okay.
So you can buy the conversion to a through axle, which they did. And then on the non-drivetrain side, essentially it is a machined piece that fits in, and it has a bunch of different widths to offset for the spacing on the rear dropouts between the chain stays and the seat stays. So if you're riding a mountain bike, that distance that you have in that hub is different, right? Yep. So it offsets that. So I'm missing those pieces. So I had to go to Wahoo. I'm like, hey, I got this from a friend. you know, I had.
I'm not a real customer of yours. Can you help me out?
I didn't pay a nickel for this, but can you do this? So, yeah, otherwise it was a big paperweight that was sitting between a couple of guys' cubes at USAT. So I'd just like to say thank you and whatever. But I packed it in a suitcase and shipped it back with like 61 pounds checking it out of the Delta. Oh, my gosh. It was so hard getting it through the airport.
Oh, yeah.
It's like just a lug. But anyways, so the camp was a huge success. We have some great new athletes out there. This virtual combine continues to go. So I saw they just posted a new one, and it's just a great recruitment tool. And as we start to get into really the big push into Paris, it was a good segue to get in there, because the first race that's coming up is going to be the Sarasota Para Triathlon Continental Cup, which is basically the first race that we can get points that will qualify going to Paris, because the points that we need to have are points from 2024, and then we get a percentage of the points from 2023 that athletes can earn, and that determines where they place on the world para triathlon rankings.
So people, it's not just a magical moment a few weeks before the Olympics. It's a long process to prep and to earn. There's a structure in place where you really have to be working it.
It is. It's not like you're making the for the marathon. It's not like you're making a qualifier time.
Just one time, one and you're in.
Nope, it's not that. So what it is you actually have to. So each class is allotted. Each class and each country is allotted a certain number of athletes that can be at the games in that class, in that gender, in that country. So let's use PT3 men, which is what this guy Prince has. Mm-hmm. Possibly he's not classified yet, so below the knee but not completely functional, like the whole knee structure is not there, but he has a brace that is on that, it's like below the knee versus like above the knee having a cup.
Yep.
And a mechanical knee. So if Prince is classified, which he has to go to a national classification, which is essentially one referee and one medical doctor.
Yep.
You get classified nationally and then classified internationally. So Sarasota will give them an opportunity to do both because it's a Continental Cup. If he gets classified as a PTS3, there are so few men in a PTS3 that he will almost be guaranteed a spot in the Paralympics if he can get points that will make him like quote unquote eligible.
Okay.
So, but the other ones will have to acquire points through racing, be competitive, and then the US will be able to select a certain number based on a criteria format that we have agreed upon through a special committee, which I actually was on. And then there are special qualifiers or special delegated spots that can be open for folks that we deem have possible potential. So there you go.
That's exciting.
It is.
It's good. So we're far enough out, so people are maybe even making their entrance into the sport, but they got to move quickly to prep.
Yep.
And then tick a few, you know, tick boxes at these events, you know, hit performances that show they're on track.
They are. So it's not just us.
Yeah.
So Katie Zafaris and Gwen Jorgensen are doing the exact same thing to try and get to Paris.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Katie is trying to get into the individual triathlon race or if she's trying to go mixed relay like Gwen is.
With the open elites, are they like, would you tailor your year, your training or your prep or your races? Is anything different functionally to try and get in just as the relay or in the open, or is it?
They have to be qualified to be there.
Yeah.
To be part of the relay. So, again, we talked about this when we had your buddy Ted here.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't have any points, because points expire after 2 years, their world triathlon points, they have to begin from scratch as if they're just breaking into the sport, which means that no funding, they have zero numbers, they're not automatically put on start lists, they have to go on a wait lists.
Mm-hmm.
So for Abu Dhabi, which is coming up, unless they are, if there are people who have points and are on the, you know, on the top 10, they can get automatic starts. Whereas Gwen and Katie have to be like ready reserve, which means if there are spots that are not taken by, you know, by within like, I think it's 48 hours beforehand, they can get on they can get on the start line, but they have to go there.
Well, that's a wild ask, just to prep for an elite level event like that, and then
travel
show up there,
and then maybe not get to race. And it's happened. It's happened lots of times. And it, like Melissa Stockwell did that last year a couple times when like when she was there for in Spain. So that happened, and it's really frustrating. It can be really frustrating for pros, but that's the life they have to live.
Yeah.
Other countries that financially back athletes, you know, like European athletes that have international or have national backing. Like the Swedes and the Finns, they don't have to worry about it. But for Americans, if they're not being backed financially by USA Tri, then or USA Para Tri, they're kind of in the wind, and that's a tough investment because now you have it's a real job, your family.
Yeah, you know? It's a different ask. Well, especially for you're looking at Gwen, who's in a chapter of life where it's like, okay, I have two kids now, I have life going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to zip off to Abu Dhabi, invest that, expense wise and then time wise, it's a big ask, especially to be waiting in the wings. Maybe not.
And does Patty Cakes, does she travel? Like, does Pat travel with her?
Yeah.
Do they bring the kids? Do they keep Pat at home with the nanny? Does she go alone?
We traveled with both our kids last for Thanksgiving last year.
And how did that go for you?
Misery. Oh. Misery, Christopher. So that was from Twin Cities to L.A., and I'm picturing U.S. to Abu Dhabi with two kids. One of them, infant or toddler, is their younger one, right? So
now you see why they serve alcohol on planes.
Yep. I sure do.
Jill and I are having this conversation right now, and not kids. Like, we're talking, like, older kids. So we just bought tickets for Paris 2024 for the Olympics.
Yep.
So we're committed to going to the Olympics. And the question is, do we bring Cole and Julian? So Cole will be 15. Julian will be 13. Do we bring them or not?
Well, Chris, you've always kind of thought of me as a son. Why is my name on that?
Your name is not on the list because you're definitely not. I'm not traveling with you anymore. We've tried that. That game did not work out very well. You forget things. I have to scramble. Well, let's just not forget the whole thing that happened, down in Tuscaloosa. Next thing you know, that was one time that you were.
That was one time. Kathy Instead solved my problem, not you.
I think I was intricate in part of that. She lent you her uniform. I don't think you would fit into it anymore.
No.
That would be an interesting look. But no, that was a different time for a different place. But, do we bring two kids to an international event that we want to, it's going to be a long haul. And we're talking kids that have a short attention span.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to be like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, in Olympics, I assume there's a lot of waiting around in line to get seated. Then you're waiting for the I'm picturing it as there's some really exciting moments and a lot of less exciting moments, especially if you're not wine drunk during the day like you and Jill will be.
So the three events that we currently hold tickets for are water polo, which I thought cool. Get to see a new venue.
Yeah.
Because you get to see like whatever the pool venue is.
Men's or women's?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Do you know
with water polo, do you know like how far in to the tournament it is? Is it like...
I just got... Jill just told me sports.
Okay.
Tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's French Open area, right?
Yep.
So it's going to be cool. Beach volleyball. And beach volleyball is going to stage right at the base of the Eiffel Tower.
Really?
Yeah. So we saw beach volleyball in London. Mm-hmm. That was really, really cool. It's outdoors. It's a good venue. We also saw archery, which was super cool. You would think kind of archery,
a little dry.
But the coolest thing about archery was the video slow-mo replays that you got to see on their Jumbotron. It showed like the arrow kind of like undulating and wobbling. Yeah, it was so cool. But it was a really good experience. So nothing at the Olympics ever is kind of like half. But
do the boys want to go?
It's not about them. It's about Jill trying to get over the memory of her mom taking her older sister to Switzerland, promising it to all the rest of her siblings, and then never following up.
Okay.
I'm never going to do that to my kids. And we took Stephanie to Switzerland, so we kind of already started that ball rolling. I don't have a problem. Cole at one point in time wanted to go to Tokyo, and I'm like, what do you want to do in Tokyo? I want to see the Pokemon Museum.
Okay, like, you're not coming.
What else do you want to do in Tokyo? Well, not much else.
You're staying home.
And Julian just wants to go eat sushi. I'm like, you know what? We'll go to Benihana for you, bud. Okay? We don't need to make this like 14-hour flight that I just barely survived alone. Never mentioned with you guys. So we'll see where it goes. And we may not. But, you know, I like to expose my kids to the world. But I think we both know it is much harder than the average person understands it to be.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're in a different... We got the young kid chapter going still. You're talking teenage and adolescent boy with Cole and Julian. Yeah.
It won't be London for sure.
No.
She won't go. But we'll do something else with her at another time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just go to the lake. Like, okay, there you are.
Hey, London, instead of going to Paris for the Olympics...
We're going to go to a walleye tournament in Brainerd.
We're going to walk down to Lake Nokomis.
We're going to go over to the snowmobile time trials in Baudette.
Okay, here's... You missed your Olympics. Missed your USA triathlon.
Mm-hmm.
New athlete jumping into the sport.
Okay.
Instagram influencer Colleen Quigley coming over from track and field.
Mm-hmm.
Was an Olympian the last Olympic cycle in like 16 in steeplechase on the track.
Okay.
Has not, you know, I don't know, but didn't go to the last Olympics and is now transitioning to triathlon. Okay. So a classic case of elite runner coming over to try. Just jumping into it early 23.
Yep.
Is it, in my bias is, unless you're swimming 40K in the pool every week, you know, unless you're doing, if you're going to extremes, maybe you could, I just don't know how you cultivate the skill set to get there in this time frame. Do you think it's possible? Or do you think it's like, maybe by the following Olympiad?
Funny enough, I had this conversation with Tommy before. Historically, swimmers coming over, you would think it'd be easy. Historically, pure swimmers coming over to try do not meet the muster.
Yep.
They don't make the grade.
They just can't get there with
the because they running. Can get out of the swim, great, but they fade and die on the run, which you can't afford to do.
Yep.
You need to have the best bets are having collegiate runners. Cross country steeplechase is great. You need to have runners at a high level that have swam and can swim.
So the Gwen Jorgensen, where it was elite runner paired with, oh, and by the way, I swam my whole life also at the collegiate level.
Yes.
That's the golden ticket.
Because she was a much better runner than she was swimmer.
But good enough in the swim.
And she couldn't bike at all.
Yep.
So you can teach the bike, not a problem. You can get swimming up to a certain level, but you have to have a base. But it ultimately comes down to the run. If you don't have a good quality runner in this day and age, they're not going to make the cut. So her coming from steeplechase, she's got the right beginnings. So the question would be, how much did she swim before this?
Yeah.
And where did she swim at? And is that game going to be even possible? Because if she gets lapped out, then she's not going to, she's out of the game right away.
Yeah. Well, I just look at the Olympic level. At that top tier of draft legal racing, if you're not in the real deal pack, don't, you know, like, why would we ever send you?
She comes out fourth pack on the bike. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
She's then, unless she's Gwen and she's going to run through the field, it's not going to happen. So this way, if she is that like next level runner and she can outrun the Taylors and she can outrun everybody else, then there's a possibility.
Yeah.
But she has to kind of be in the field. So you need to really be coming in second, third pack bike at best or at worst.
Yeah.
To have
main field or chase pack.
Yeah, to have a shot.
You think even third, you give them the grace? I wouldn't give guy much.
Depends on the spread. I mean, if you get third pack, third pack could be like 30 seconds back. Third pack
if they're motivated, if you're motivated and collaborating well, three riders collaborating well, taking great pulls, can bring back a bigger group if they're farting around.
Yeah, and I'm not talking like where they are in T1, I'm talking in T2.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're coming to T2, third pack on the bike, and normally third pack's away ways back. There's been some consolidation going on, but if you're 45 seconds back, maybe a minute back, we saw Gwen do that.
Yeah.
You know, in the Gwen early days before she came in off the bike on the lead.
Yep.
We watched, you know, Gwen Sanity happen. That was the Gwen Sanity moment, right? She ran through the field. Nobody ever ran through the field at her level. And then once she was off the bike in first or second, then she just basically just toyed with people. It's like you watch somebody go up. It's like, we'll give you the first half of the run just to be in the lead for the little bit of TV time. And then I'm just going to reel you in like a fish.
Yeah.
And that's what she did. So if you have somebody like your friend Colleen that has, or was it Colleen?
I didn't say friend, but Instagram influencer Colleen Quigley.
Okay. Future sponsored athlete by MSP Moves. No. We're going to put it on the kit. It's going to go international. So, you know, it's going to be good. If she can run like that, and she can, and I don't know any of her numbers,
yeah,
then there's a great possibility. And I like steeplechase runners better than just pure track runners because it shows a lot more durability, much like how if you have athletes who run cross country, a lot more durability and a lot more flexibility, especially in triathlon running, which is not just pure running on the track. So I like that. That would be good. And it'd be interesting to see. And I will now watch for her in that program. So do you know where she's going to be racing first?
She, again, this is an Instagram influencer that I don't even really follow, but I keep an eye on.
Okay.
Because I'm using that word because speaking as someone
it's better than stalking?
No, I'm saying influencer, even though I tried to be an influencer to a degree while I was a pro athlete and I was not very influential, even though it still is kind of me because I have to use, you know, I can't begrudge anyone using social media to sell stuff, to make money for yourself. Okay, that's business. I get it. But still, you find them all. We're a little annoying when we do it.
Yes.
Yes.
A little?
A little.
Yeah, it can be that way.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye out for, what was her name, Colleen?
Colleen Quigley.
Is it Colleen or Colleen?
You tell me.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
She's your friend. You just walked right into that. I'm putting you in another box. Are you putting you in another box? I swear, between the peripheral non-cool sports of Wisconsin that you are deeming as Wisconsin and Iowa, mm-hmm. with the mountain biking and cross-country skiing, and now you being a close personal friend of this steeplechase runner who is potentially going to go to the Olympics, who I think you're trying to, you know, get an alignment on. I have got you. I've got you in a box that says U-Haul right in the side, baby.
We saw certainly at the local elite level, you know, we see like a Dan Hedgecock and a Pat Parrish come over to try.
Never heard of them.
It's more than 10 years ago. You wouldn't remember those guys. You were always, but you sure, always liked Pat.
I was eating off the food table while they were being on the podium.
You always liked that.
I'm just kidding. I know them both.
PP.
I know.
Yo, but they figured
he was like Gollum, by the way. I used to make fun of him because he was translucent.
He really was not very tan. They figured out the swim to an extent, but their running may have been close to the, you know, not quite at, but close to the demands of, well, no, because you got to run a 30 flat or a 31 off the bike if you're going to be an Olympian now.
Mm-hmm.
So they maybe weren't quite at that level, even in the run.
I mean, even
but they could, they were fast enough to be local elites and technically race as pros.
Yeah. I mean, if you even think back to DKT, mm-hmm. David Thompson, he could run in that field sometimes, but not consistently enough. He was not able to run. Like, we saw him up against like a Hunter Kemper,
yeah,
you know, at Lifetime, and he just never was.
Because he could do 32, 33 off the bike, maybe on a really, really good day.
On his best day, he could do it to a 33. Hunter was running 31s.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it seems close, but it's a different level.
Oh, completely different. And so, you know, David was a monster on the bike. Yeah. That was his deal. And he could swim fairly decent, but he wasn't coming off the swim, getting a ginormous lead in the bike, and then getting back. Draft legal racing is a different animal, and he was impacted by his inability to run consistently at the level he needed. And I think that's kind of when we draw that parallel and getting back to why we're looking for people who can run fast,
yeah,
and have a swim background as a primary. That's exactly it.
It's an unbeatable combo.
It is. You need to be able to. You need to be able to close.
Yeah.
You can't. There's not enough room to get a lead on the bike that's going to ever allow you to do that. That's just not realistic today.
Even to swim, to get to the swim level where you're consistently front pack with elite swimmers is really hard. Because I was good enough in swimming. I had enough of a swim background to swim in the main field or chase pack of a non-ITU race, so the swimming level was lower.
Yeah.
So I could just hold on in those contexts, but in the ITU, it wouldn't have been close in an ITU.
No. And you mean you look like Sarah McLarty.
Yep.
Good friend. She's an amazing person. She's maybe one of the best swimmers that's ever been in the sport of triathlon.
Yep. Always front.
I don't think there was a race that she ever didn't come in first. I mean, actually, I remember when Hy-Vee, she raced Hy-Vee specifically to get that $5,000 preem. But her run was never on par. And it just was always her Achilles heel. And that was her major limiter. And, you know, she was able to dial that back. But some of that is physiologically based. That it's like, okay, you are born to be able to be that great runner. You know, there's a physiology. Look at Gwen. We were training on the track in Colorado Springs. And this South African lady who was a 15K athlete from the Olympics from South Africa. And I didn't get her name.
15K?
No, 1500. Sorry, 1500. Okay. Yeah. 1500 and then also, I'm sorry. She was 10K runner.
Yep.
10K runner. And then she was trying to breach into marathon.
Oh, okay.
And dude, I tell you, this is a grown woman who was probably like 5'10". She had a pelvis and hips that were smaller than my 7-year-old.
Yeah.
And I've always said that you can tell like endurance athletes by the size of their pelvis. The bigger the pelvis, the slower they're going to be. And whether it's
why are you looking at my pelvis?
Because you and have then... that couch has a very large pelvis imprint on it. Just like myself.
I had a pelvis for a 36-minute 10K, not a 30 flat.
I'm going to go in and I'm going to have a pelvis reduction surgery where they're going to chisel away pieces and they're going to put it back together. And I'm going to go from a 34 waist to a 28.
Mm-hmm.
No, but that has always been a very common thing. And even with cyclists or runners, you never see outside of like maybe some sprinters in cycling, you never see anybody with big hips, big pelvises that are in the top of their game in an endurance sport.
Yeah.
And
well, cyclists, the bigger framed athletes like a Fabian Contralara, bigger framed athlete, specializes in TT, specializes in breakaways, specializes in classics. There's a certain type of race where the course allows him to excel.
Yep.
But generally speaking, roadie cyclists are teeny tiny little guys.
Exactly. They're not a GC guy.
No.
And they're starving themselves to get there. That's kind of how it is.
You read the books about the guys who are trying to win the tour.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a fun lifestyle to shrink yourself down into the 130s.
I mean, you even think about Jens Voigt, who was a middle-sized man.
Yep.
Fought for a long time just to be like, you know, for a handful of wins.
Yep.
It kind of became his attitude that was his champion there. So
shut up, legs.
Yeah, I know. It's all good. So
he got a
little Jens.
Very good marketer.
Yes.
End of the day, elite athlete. Yes, very skilled, very high level pro. But you would have to say he's a better marketer than winner.
The shut up legs was definitely a good thing. He grabbed onto that and just ran with it. I think if he would have came 5 to 7 years later, I don't know that he would have been there if he'd have been able to hang on.
Yeah.
Because he
would get out front and just do epic breakaways care if he got caught at the end.
He's like, you know what? It's like he Wayne Gretzky did. Like you make 100% of the shots, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Right? You miss 100% of the opportunities to break away that you don't take. And he's like, I'm going to do it. I don't care. This is going to happen. And sometimes it did happen, but more times than not, it didn't. But I think that in his era, those type of guys were able to exist. Just like 40 years before that, guys that could smoke on the bike while they were riding, they existed. I think today, I don't think Jens could hang today. In his style of riding, in his body size, I don't think it would work today.
So even call it 10 years from his prime till now.
It was a big change.
Yeah.
It was a big change. You know, he came at the right time and the right space. Those guys really were, they existed in that time. It's like in hockey, you don't have the guys that specialize in fighting now. You know, you get like for the Minnesota Wild, they have a Ryan Reeves, who is like one in a million. Like he can skate, he can play, he can fight. But back in the day of Basil McRae, you could be a pure fighter.
So the actual hockey skill, a true enforcer type.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that the evolution of sport, I think it transcends the individual sport itself. So just like hockey had a transition of, there was a time where you could be a specialist like this and you could live. Now it doesn't happen because the game has changed. Cycling, I think, is exactly the same. You could have had a bigger guy that could do things. That could, you know, maybe move the marker. Now they couldn't exist.
Well, when there's more elite level talents training really well and focused on the same events,
yeah,
it just gets more competitive over
time.
It does.
I think
and triathlon, in 10 years, we've watched that happening with Ironman, with the Olympic level, all these different tracks in triathlon. The names that you and I best know or would always benchmark against when I was racing seriously, the field gets better.
It does.
You know, the level of swimming at Ironman is higher now. The level of riding, you know, what used to be the Kona record is now like, oh, yeah, I was main pack and I went 4:18.
Yeah.
And it's like Chris Lieto in 08 went 4:18 and it was this huge record, is this huge breakaway.
Remember when sub 8 was like a thing that never happened?
Yeah, it was
the
epic.
The top 10 guys this year went sub 8.
At Kona.
At Kona. And the top 4 guys went faster than than the PR at Kona.
Yeah.
It is true. I mean, it begs a question that I don't know that we can ever answer, is when will we see the peak of human performance at these endurance sports? When will the fastest 100 be swam? When will the fastest Ironman be completed? When will we see the limit happen outside of doping? When will we see that limit happen and be found? And can it ever be found?
Well, it just gets more and more. So in triathlon, we're a younger sport. The improvements come in bigger chunks. You look at track, where people have been racing the 10K seriously for a longer time. The improvements come in little, teeny tiny little chunks.
Yep.
You know, in triathlon, as we mature, it gets more and more. It's already more established, or it's harder to make a huge breakthrough.
And there are three metrics to move too. So you have, like in track, you have one thing that you can move.
Yep.
Move. You can only do, like, how do you run faster versus running faster, biking faster, swimming faster. There's like three different like elements there. Three silos that you can like grab time in. So interesting question. We'll have to.
Going into the Olympic year, I've mentioned one Instagram influencer. Is there anyone you're watching with curiosity for the triathlon, for the USA team for triathlon?
Not yet, because we're not going to the Olympic year yet. We're
the penultimate year.
I will be more interested to see who toes the line at the test event in August, and then between the two Augusts, then I will dial in the people that I start to stalk.
Okay.
And really, really watch. But it'll be fun to see. In paratriathlon, what I'm excited to see is I'm excited to see the possibilities of dual athletes, people swimming and doing triathlon, people running and doing triathlon. I'll be excited to see if Colleen and Taylor can pull those things off.
Yep.
I think they can. Their federations are open to it. It'd be fun to see.
Now, wouldn't that be interesting if one federation, if USA Triathlon is like, yeah, we'll allow you to do both, and then like the track federation is like, no, only us.
Well, yeah, I mean, swimming's got nothing to say because they're already been in hot water for so long.
Yeah.
So they can't, you know, there's a whole other quagmire we're not going to get into.
Nope.
All right, well, lots for us to noodle on over the next couple weeks. Devin, this has been fun.
Of course, and if anyone needs help shoveling in the snowpocalypse,
call Devin.
Six deals and MSB moves will come shovel for you.
There's still time for Devin to close on six deals. He's got one on Thursday that he can do, and you just get all there. So good luck to you. Hopefully you got enough premium gas at the gas station before you go. And if you haven't, go fill up your gas tank so you have some.
Will do.
Because the snowblowers don't run well on regular gas.
Good to know. Yeah. And I will see you on Friday evening for the Basil McRae launch.
Absolutely. I promise to be in good form and maybe see Paul Phillips there taking photos too.
Oh, Paul's coming? Great.
Maybe. Awesome. He gave me a strong maybe.
A firm maybe from Paul. A
firm maybe. We'll see how the snow apocalypse impacts his ability to get his Prius out.
Hey, tell Basil to be better when you're there. How about that?
I'm totally going to tell. I would have had him on the podcast, but it would have been a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
I felt like I was asking for a lot already. Know your limits, folks. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Well, thank you, Devin, for being here. So on behalf of Devin and myself, I'd like to tell you thank you, and thanks for being supporting, and thanks for going back and listening to all our old episodes. And until next time, be a little better.